This is Jordan Sekulow. Today is the first part in our series of the debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein at the Air Force Academy about religious freedom in the military.
Live from Washington, D.C.
This is my right.
Jay Sekulow Live.
Right given by God.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now.
Live a free life.
Call 1-800-684-3110.
Live in freedom.
That's 1-800-684-3110.
Talking about freedom.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
I will fight.
Hey, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. Today we're bringing you a special debate. My dad's talked about in the program before. We broke it down into you into different shows this week. It's a debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein. He is the head of Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which is upset about the role that the religion and Christianity has played in the armed services, specifically at military schools. And this debate was at the Air Force Academy just a couple of months ago. This is part one of the debate. So let's begin.
I'm Professor Dave Fitzke, a faculty member in the Academy's Department of Law, and I am tonight's moderator. Conventional wisdom says to avoid discussions among strangers on politics and religion. Well, here we go. This is one time, however, where the conventional wisdom is wrong. The U.S. Air Force Academy, as a world-class academic institution committed to the open exchange of ideas, must engage this vital issue head-on. It's essential to what we do. Furthermore, as a public institution, we must do so in a forum that is open to the public so that everyone can have the opportunity to see how we do business and to get a chance to share your concerns and questions directly with both these distinguished individuals. The Air Force Academy's Faculty Forum, as the representative organization for senior faculty at the Air Force Academy, is proud to have made this event a reality. The debate this evening is on what is the appropriate balance between religious freedom and official neutrality in the military. This question arises in part because of the First Amendment's two religion clauses. The Establishment Clause prohibits the government from making any law respecting the establishment of religion. The Free Exercise Clause generally says that the government cannot prohibit the free exercise of religion. As I anticipate that we will see tonight, sometimes those clauses come into conflict with each other. The topic of religion, of course, is important to many people, which is, I suspect, why many of you are here this evening. The Supreme Court has correctly observed of Americans that, quote, we are a religious people, unquote. And certainly religion is no less important in the military, where many military members draw strength, inspiration, and comfort from their religious beliefs as they risk their lives in defense of our nation. As we explore the important question of the appropriate balance between religious freedom and official neutrality in the military, we are delighted and honored to have two distinguished and prominent guests with us tonight, Mr. Mikey Weinstein and Mr. Jay Sekulow. Time does not permit me to tell you about all that they have accomplished in their distinguished careers, but I would like to tell you just a little bit about each as outlined in your programs. Mr. Mikey Weinstein is a 1977 graduate of the Air Force Academy and served for 10 years as an Air Force JAG attorney. He is president and founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which is dedicated to ensuring religious freedom in the military by advocating strict separation of church and state. He also authored a recently released book, With God on Our Side. Mr. Jay Sekulow is the chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, a law firm and educational organization dedicated to protecting religious and constitutional freedoms. He has argued a number of important religious freedom cases before the Supreme Court. He also hosts a national call-in radio show that is broadcast on 550 stations each day. As we engage this difficult, important, and sensitive topic tonight, it's imperative that we all conduct ourselves with the respect and dignity that the vital importance of the issue demands.
Freedom.
Now more than ever, our men and women who serve in the military deserve our gratitude, our respect, and our prayers. And those who serve in the military should be able to turn to their chaplains for prayer. But there's a problem. The freedom of military chaplains to pray according to their faith is now threatened. It's a troubling development, one that must be met head-on. That's why the American Center for Law and Justice is backing an effort spearheaded by North Carolina Congressman Walter Jones to urge President Bush to direct Defense Secretary Gates to issue new regulations to protect the constitutional right of military chaplains to pray according to their faith. That means ensuring chaplains can pray in the name of Jesus. Stand with the ACLJ and sign on today to the Petition to Protect Military Prayer. Send an important message to President Bush. Sign the petition now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. The Petition to Protect Military Prayer. You can also add your name online at aclj.org.
Regent Law School is training Christian lawyers to change the world.
Jay Sekulo, Chief Counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. He knows the value of an education at Regent University, and he knows Regent School of Law is much more than just an educational institution.
Regent is unique in that it offers the highest quality of legal education from a Christian perspective, and we never sacrifice intellectual integrity.
If you're considering a career in the law, it's time for you to consider Regent Law School. Regent Law School is distinctive because it integrates the study of law with biblical principles. Regent believes that law is more than just a profession. It's a calling. The time to apply right now. If you would like more information about the School of Law at Regent University or would like to enroll, call this toll-free number, 1-877-267-5072. That's 1-877-267-5072. There's more information online at regent.edu/law. Regent Law School, training Christian lawyers to change the world.
This is my right, a right given by God, to live a free life, to live in freedom.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulo Live. You've been listening to an important debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein at the U.S. Air Force Academy. We've broken it up into segments for you, and it's an important debate. This is about the role of religion in our military schools. This was done at the U.S. Air Force Academy.
And now it's time to begin the debate. Mr. Weinstein, you may begin.
First of all, I'd like to thank all of you. Can you hear me out there? Show of hands? Excellent. Always wanted to do that. I'd like to thank all of you for coming through this absolutely wretchedly hideous weather, and I'm delighted to be able to be here. It's the first time I spoke here many times in the past, in my years at the White House and other times, but this is the first time since I've been in this war. And, you know, I come to you today as somebody's son, I'm somebody's husband, you know, I'm somebody's father and somebody's uncle. My youngest son, who God willing will graduate in the event in May, is the sixth member of my family to attend this school. My older son and his wife both graduated. My brother-in-law, my brother went here. And, you know, this place for me is the most important thing in the world to me, other than being a husband or a son, a father, or an uncle. Having to take on my school and take on this fight has been bitter for me and bitter for my family. Let me tell you what I'm about. There's a lot of misperception. And I can tell you that being here today, this is the first time that our two sides, the legions that I lead and the legions that that Jay leads, have ever had any interface. It's been a long, hard battle. This is a very, very short period of time. We have 600 seconds to open up, 300 seconds for rebuttal, then 300 seconds for closing. I can tell you what I'm not about is trying to eliminate anybody's religious faith or take religion out of the military. We have thousands of chapels and thousands of chaplains in the U.S. military. My wife and I were married at the one right down there, the largest university cathedral in the world, the first, I think, only maybe Jewish ceremony in the history of the Protestant chapel. We are not about that. What we are about is making sure that during the duty day and duty night, nobody is involuntarily forced to accept another religious faith. Now, I know I'm at war, and my legions are at war. We are not at war with Christianity, and we are not at war with evangelical Christianity. But we are at war with a subset of evangelical Christianity with a long technical name that I hope won't take the rest of my time. I'll say it just one time today. It's premillennial, dispensational, reconstructionist, dominionist, evangelical, fundamentalist Christianity. I know it's a long name. We'll just call them Bob. But Dominionist Christianity, the leaders you know very well, Robertson, Dobson, used to be Haggard, he's had a career change. D. James Kennedy, John Hagee, a lot of people that I won't be going out to dinner with in a, for a long time. Ultimately, what we have now in America, I mean, when this thing started at the Air Force Academy, I thought that this was something that would be a two-inch, you know, a Tiger Woods two-inch putt to fix. Little did I know that it was something that is actually plaguing in a massive way our entire Pentagon. We now have 737 U.S. military installations that the Pentagon acknowledges. It's actually closer to 1,000. In 132 countries around the world, and every one of them, there is a presence of the Officers' Christian Fellowship for the officers and Christian Military Fellowship for the enlisted. I'm sure some of you are here today. Now, the goals of these organizations are fascinating, and they're unabashed about it, and they view it as a higher goal than the oath they took, many of them here, to support and defend, protect and preserve the Constitution of the United States, which is our social contract, and was the very first time in human history that a governing document for a nation state did not invoke the name of a specific deity. The first goal is they want to see a spiritually transformed U.S. military. I'm not done. Goal number two, with ambassadors for Christ in uniform, and number three, empowered by the Holy Spirit. My problem is the in uniform part and the during the day part. 1789, March 1789, the Constitution finally is running our country. December 1791, the Bill of Rights is passed. The Bill of Rights contains, of course, the First Amendment, which has those 16 golden words, which sets up the dynamic tension between the Free Exercise Clause and the Establishment Clause. I'm sure that my friend Jay has a different perspective about this concept of separation of church and state, but I'm going to tell you, from my perspective, we don't have time to put evidence on today. It exists. I view it as the separation of supernatural and natural in the technologically most lethal organization ever created by Homo sapiens, which is our honorable and noble U.S. military. I'm sad to report to you today, as I come to you with the gun smoke in my face from this battle, that that wall is nothing but smoke and debris. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Whether or not the military wants to accept it or not, and I'm a Republican, but I've given up on the Republican Party because I believe that under Republicans, man exploits man, but under Democrats, it's just the opposite. So I've decided to go into federal court. I've been there. We're going to go back again. The U.S. military is going to be constrained by our law and our Supreme Court and our federal decisions, at least to the same degree that a shift manager at Starbucks, Wendy's, Walgreens, Chipotle, or Costco is. If you want to see a Fortune 1000 CEO brought to his or her knees, ladies and gentlemen, cadets, officers, enlisted, members of the public, have the most junior employee in the mailroom say, "Stop, I'm getting me a lawyer because I'm being evangelized in the workplace." That is a killer lawsuit, speaking as a litigator. That's a killer lawsuit under Title VII of the U.S. Code, even without specific intent. Disparate treatment versus disparate impact. But in the U.S. military, it's a trillion times worse. That isn't just your shift manager, that's your military superior. We have the Uniform Code of Military Justice. We have this concept we call the Draconian Specter of Command Influence. In the Pentagon, we actually have regulations that prevent superiors from pushing Amway, Mary Kay Cosmetics, and Tupperware on subordinates. And yet it's happening. Thousands have come to our foundation. Sailors, soldiers, Marines, and airmen. Here's the sea change for you. 96% are Christians. 3/4 traditional Protestants, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Methodists, Assemblies of God, Church of Christ, even Baptists. 1/4 are generally Roman Catholic. 4 or 5% will be Jewish like I am, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, Wiccan, atheist, agnostic. It's basically Dominionist Christianity, praying, P-R-A-Y, ladies and gentlemen, and P-R-E-Y, on non-evangelical Christians saying, "You know what? You're not Christian enough. We don't see that personal relationship with Jesus Christ. As a result, you're going to burn eternally in the fires of hell along with the Jews." I don't have time to tell you all the thousands of cases, but they're stunning and they're startling, from generals to privates, from basic airmen to colonels. But I can tell you one thing. I've had a lot of people try to get me to stop doing this. My family and I get routinely death threats. That just comes with the nature of the territory. I got one today at 1216 at the Broadmoor, telling me that my red blood would stain the white snow here. I had to call Regney's office to see if it was actually snowing. Now I know. But I can tell you something. They've said to me, "Mikey, look, if you've got the cure for cancer, wouldn't you want to give it to our members of the military? We have the cure for cancer, Mikey. Don't you understand that? You're a Republican. You're a graduate. My God, what's wrong with you? Strong military tradition in your family. 3 generations of military academy graduates. 120 years, combined years, in my immediate family of combined active duty military service at every major combat engagement this country's been in, from World War I to the current so-called global war on terror. Come on, Mikey, what's wrong with you? They don't even realize that by asking that, they're insulting my faith and the faith of anyone who's not a Dominionist Christian by calling us a cancer. So what I've said is, look, I try to explain the basics. We talk about the Constitution. We talk about Clause 3, Article 6 of the body of the Constitution, where our founding fathers were so prescient that they stated we will never have a religion test for any position in the U.S. government. And where were we all, ladies and gentlemen, on Tuesday, July 12, 2005, when on the front page of the Pentagon, on the front page of the New York Times, the paper most reviled by the Pentagon, the number 2 ranking chaplain in the U.S. Air Force, of the thousands of chaplains and members of that corps, Brigadier General Cecil R. Richardson, made the amazing statement that it was now Air Force policy to reserve its right to evangelize anyone that it determines to be unchurched. My wife and I raised the hands. We have 3 kids in the U.S. Air Force, 2 of them graduates, 1 at the academy. Do our kids fall on this Richard Nixon era enemies list of being unchurched? And if so, we now demand, Air Force, are you going to exercise your reserved right to evangelize them? For 88 days, they wouldn't answer. We sued them on the 89th day. We'll be going back into federal court soon. Most of America is docile and supine. I would ask you to please consider looking at the facts here. We're talking about when you're in a situation where even if you're being gently evangelized by a military superior, if you're a subordinate, get out of my face, sir or ma'am, is not an option for you. It's not an option. And it's rarely someone, a superior officer, looking you directly in the face saying, you need to get right with Jesus. You know what I'm talking about. You're mostly a military audience. It's the tacit nuance. It's always the tacit nuance. Benjamin Franklin was the rock star of his day. He walked out of the Constitutional Conventions besieged by American citizens. Mr. Benjamin Franklin, what type of government have you bequeathed to us? His response, a republic, if you can keep it. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me keep the republic. Thank you.
Join with us. We're asking the president to issue an executive order. That's what it's going to take here to get it done. Getting it through Congress, through the legislative channel, just with the change in Congress, just isn't going to happen. But we can get an executive order here, but we got to urge the president to do it. 877-989-2255. Again, we need to hear from you on this. 877-989-2255. And we really want you to help us to make sure these chaplains can pray according to the dictates of their conscience, according to the dictates of their faith commitment, without a censorship. So again, 877-989-2255 or ACLJ.org for updated information. Talking about
freedom. When you choose Regent University's undergraduate program, you're choosing to change your life.
I chose Regent University because
the quality of education that you receive,
the Christian perspective,
and then I saw the level of excellence.
Just the level at which the professors expect you to perform at is such a high level.
The professors are so amazing.
The care of the instructors,
totally dedicated,
and they go out of their way to make sure that they can help you.
They embrace you as though you're one of their children.
Everyone becomes just a big family,
and they want to catapult you into your destiny.
I knew that I was definitely home.
You're not just going to a school, but you're gaining a family that operates with the spirit of excellence.
I rate it from 1 to 10, a solid 10, absolutely.
I definitely feel like I received a top-notch education.
The undergrad program opened up doors for me.
I'll have a bright future because of the education that I received at Regent University.
Every aspect of your education is just amazing and just such a blessing.
Learn more at regentundergrad.com. You can also call toll-free 1-800-374-4504. That's 1-800-374-4504. Regent Undergrad. Enroll today. Now more than ever, our men and women who serve in the military deserve our gratitude, our respect, and our prayers. And those who serve in the military should be able to turn to their chaplains for prayer. But there's a problem. The freedom of military chaplains to pray according to their faith is now threatened. It's a troubling development, one that must be met head-on. That's why the American Center for Law and Justice is backing an effort spearheaded by North Carolina Congressman Walter Jones to urge President Bush to direct Defense Secretary Gates to issue new regulations to protect the constitutional right of military chaplains to pray according to their faith. That means ensuring chaplains can pray in the name of Jesus. Stand with the ACLJ and sign on today to the Petition to Protect Military Prayer. Send an important message to President Bush. Sign the petition now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. The Petition to Protect Military Prayer. You can also add your name online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast. This week we've been playing for you an important debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein. It was at the U.S. Air Force Academy just a couple months ago. We talked a lot about this debate over the past few months, and we've had Michael Weinstein on the program to discuss his organization, Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which takes an opposing view to the American Center for Law and Justice on these issues. It's an important debate. We've broken it down for you, so if you've missed a day, just go to aclj.org. You can check out the debate online. Let's go back and start listening to the debate again.
First, let me say thank you for having us. Thank you for allowing this debate to take place. And Mikey and I got a chance to talk a little bit back before this event, and I'm glad that we're having an opportunity to dialogue. This is the debate, but I also think it's a dialogue. And I come to this from a different perspective. I'm not going to get into issues of fact as to what happened or what did not happen in a particular academy, but I want to set forth some principles that I think govern this. First, as Justice William O. Douglas of the Supreme Court of the United States, not a conservative member of the court by any stretch of the imagination, some consider him one of the most liberal justices in Supreme Court history, said, "We are a religious people whose institutions presuppose the existence of a supreme being." William Brennan, another liberal member of the Supreme Court of the United States, said, "The Establishment Clause doesn't license government to treat religious people or religious practices as if they're subversive to the American Republic and therefore subject to unique disabilities." Our own Declaration of Independence says we're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. That's a big statement. It's an important statement. It's a statement that recognizes there are some rights, freedoms, and liberty that are transcendent, that the government can not only not take away, but they can't control, and that we're endowed with these: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was actually a concept from John Locke, this idea of a transcendent truth, and I probably would suspect all of us agree that that is an important concept. How does that play within the context of the military? Is the military an enclave immune from the First Amendment? And the answer, I think, much like in a school setting, has to be no. Now, you cannot use the coercive power of the state, whether it's in uniform or, for that matter, out of uniform, to compel or coerce participation in a religious exercise. You cannot give someone less credit because they don't share your particular view. You can't penalize someone simply because they espouse a different theological perspective than you do, or espouse no theological perspective at all. But there is this tension that exists, and it's not only within the context of the Establishment Clause in the United States Constitution. We do have the Free Exercise Clause, and just as important, that same Supreme Court that acknowledged that we are a religious people also said, look, religious prayer and worship are forms of speech protected by the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. I think that's an important statement. I think it gives us parameters to work with. Now, I did a case, which seems like a lifetime ago, and most of you were, the students here were barely very young, because was it 1990? The case actually started in 1984. Some of you were barely a twinkle in your parents' eyes, if that. But I did a case that actually went to the Supreme Court in 1990. It was a case involving the constitutionality of what was called the Equal Access Act. Congress passed the statute that said, look, there is widespread discrimination that exists among schools where they're prohibiting various student groups to meet, including amongst those religious student groups that were being denied access under various policies, all alerting and all alleging violations of church-state separation. And this case went to the Supreme Court of the United States. It was started by a 15-year-old. And while I disagree with Mikey's legal position, I am glad we live in a country where you can bring a lawsuit and you can litigate these issues. We are a country that believes in the rule of law. And I certainly did that on behalf of Bridget Mergens, who actually lived in Colorado Springs. When she brought the case, she was a high school student in Omaha. And the argument that the school made, and I think it's going to fit right within the context of this as well, I'm going to read this right from the opinion. Petitioners, and that was the school board, maintained that because the school recognized student activities that are an integral part of its educational mission, official recognition of the religious club would effectively incorporate religious activities into the school official's program, endorse participation in the religious club, and provide the school and the club with an official platform to, quote, proselytize other students. The Supreme Court answered that in two words: we disagree. Petitioners urged, went on, the court said, that their student religious club's meetings are held under the school's aegis, and that because the state's compulsory attendance laws bring the students together without choice, it provides a ready-made audience for student evangelists. This is right out of the Supreme Court opinion. An objective observer, the school said, would find themselves in the position of the school endorsing religion. The Supreme Court of the United States answered with two words: we disagree. The reason I point up to the "we disagree" is that the court recognized a crucial difference. And I think this is a principle that could be very helpful within the academy. We may have some agreement on this. The court recognized, and this was Justice O'Connor again on church-state separation, clearly leaning more towards the separationist view than the accommodationist view. She was opposed to, for instance, prayer at the graduation ceremonies. But she said this: there's a crucial difference between government speech endorsing religion, which the Establishment Clause forbids, and private speech endorsing religion, which the Free Speech and Free Exercise Clauses protect. We think that secondary school students are mature enough and are likely to understand that a school does not endorse or support student speech that it merely permits on a non-discriminatory basis. And here's the key aspect: the proposition that schools do not endorse everything they fail to censor is not complicated. What does that mean for an institution as prestigious as the Air Force Academy? It means that cadet-to-cadet discussions in a non-coercive, non-threatening, non-penalized way about religious faith and practices and beliefs should be allowed. It's robust free speech. It means that you may hear something as a student at this wonderful institution that you disagree with. That's the price of freedom. Now, you shouldn't be penalized because you disagree. You shouldn't be compelled to violate your conscience. But you also don't get a heckler's veto. And I'm not going to get into the particulars of what happened here tonight here, because you all have a lot more facts about that than I do. But I will tell you this: student to student expression of religious views, religious position, and even as the Supreme Court said, student evangelism, proselytizing, was protected speech in a high school. I would think it would be protected speech in an institution as prestigious as the Air Force Academy. Now, it can't be disruptive of the school environment. In the middle of your civil engineering or aeronautical engineering courses, you don't get to stand up and make a statement about your faith. But it certainly should be something that student to student, student clubs that are cadet clubs that have these particular religious views should have the right to meet on the same terms and conditions as anyone else. And as far as faculty goes, there's another famous case that gets ignored these days. It was a 1969 case, and it came out of a military conflict. The conflict was in Vietnam. And students, when I was in school, when Mikey, we were the same age, so we were in school at the same time, there was a lot of protests going on in school campuses around the country about a war. It was the Vietnam War. And a lot of us protested the war, some of us because it gave us a reason not to be in class, others because they had really sincere convictions on it, but they wore black armbands. That was the 1969 form of protest. And the court said that neither students nor teachers surrender their rights to freedom of speech at the schoolhouse gate.
The idea that the government is looking over your shoulder, if you're a chaplain, to say how you pray or not pray. We think that's wrong. It's going to take an executive order to do it. We need your help on this. I'm urgently calling for your participation, and we really want you to help us to make sure these chaplains can pray according to the dictates of their conscience, according to the dictates of their faith commitment, without censorship. So again, 877-989-2255 or aclj.org for updated information.
Folks, tomorrow on the broadcast, you'll hear more from the debate between my dad and Michael Weinstein at the U.S. Air Force Academy. We thank you for listening today.